A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about standalone ONT bridges, the kind you buy yourself to replace whatever combo box the ISP dumped in your closet. Two core use cases. First, what if you want a fiber backbone inside your home? Jeep on in from the ISP. Fiber out to your switches. Second, the more common setup. Jeep on in. Cat6e Ethernet out to a normal network. And then there's the wild card, hybrid devices with SFP cages and copper ports on the same box. Pros, cons, the pitfalls that bite people. This is a practical buyer's guide. Where do we even start?
We start by naming the problem that nobody talks about until they're 3 hours deep in a Reddit thread at midnight. ISP combo gateways in bridge mode are unreliable. They route when they're supposed to bridge. They crash silently during a video call, and you don't notice until your wife asks why the baby monitor froze. The dream is simple. Rip the ISP box out entirely and plug the fiber straight into your own equipment.
The single-owner neckbeard dream.
It is achievable. But what sits between the ISP's fiber and your router is a piece of hardware most people have never shopped for, a standalone GPON ONT. It's not a router, not a switch, not a modem in the cable sense. It's a bridge that terminates the GPON signal and hands off a standard network connection. 2.5 gig down, 1.25 up, over a single strand of glass thinner than a human hair.
We're not here to teach what GPON is. If you're shopping for an ONT, you already know. You probably already have the fiber run to your house. The question is which box will stick you by, and whether your ISP will let you use it.
So let me frame the product landscape before we dive into specs. Category 1, fiber to fiber. These are ONTs that take GPON in and give you a fiber output, usually via an SFP cage or directly as an SFP stick you plug into your switch. Category 2, fiber to Ethernet ONT bridges. Traditional standalone boxes with an SC-APC fiber port on one side and RJ45 on the other. Category 3, hybrid devices that give you both. SFP cages and copper ports, so you can mix fiber and Ethernet downstream however you like.
The fiber-to-fiber stuff first. This is the compact, elegant, heat-generating, ISP-infuriating category.
The poster child is the Nokia G0110SP. This is a GPON SFP stick. It looks like any other SFP module, maybe a little longer, but it contains a full ONT inside. The GPON termination logic, the SerDes, everything. You plug it directly into an SFP cage on your switch or router, connect your ISP's fiber to the SC-APC port on the front of the stick, and if everything is configured right, the switch sees a standard network interface.
If everything is not configured right, you join the hundreds of people on the Ubiquiti subreddit wondering why their switch says no link.
The numbers on this thing. It draws about 1.5 watts. That sounds trivial until you realize that an SFP cage and a passively cooled switch with no airflow can let that stick climb past 60 degrees Celsius. The spec sheet says it's rated for 0 to 70 degrees, but from testing by multiple community members, the link starts getting flaky above 65. At 70 degrees, you're in dropped packet territory. And in a closed patch panel in a closet in summer, especially somewhere like Texas or Israel, you'll hit that.
The fiction of it just disappears into the switch, bumps into the reality of thermal physics. It's like those people who mount a router inside a wall cavity behind a painting. Looks great in the Instagram photo. 6 months later, they're on a forum asking why their Zoom calls drop every afternoon at 3.
The painting is an insulator. The wall cavity has zero airflow. You've built a tiny oven for your networking gear and hung art on the front of it.
The SFP stick version of that is even more extreme because there's no chassis to dissipate into. It's a metal tube crammed between other metal tubes, all of them generating their own heat.
The other big player in this space is the Ubiquiti UF GPON. Same concept, SFP stick, direct plug. But the firmware differences are significant. The Nokia tends to work with Huawei OLTs. The Ubiquiti stick was designed primarily for Ubiquiti's own UFiber OLT platform, though people have gotten it working with various ISPs. Comm also now sells their own GPON SFP modules. The community has documented that their modules come fairly open, less vendor lock-in, and they offer pre-configuration services where they'll flash your ISP's serial number before shipping.
That's the bottleneck, isn't it? The serial number. You can't just buy the stick and plug it in. The ISP's OLT needs to recognize the ONT on the other end, and if the serial number doesn't match what's provisioned in their system, you get nothing.
This is the biggest misconception in the whole space. People think, I'll buy a GPON SFP stick off eBay and I'm done. And then they plug it in, and the ISP's OLT ignores it. GPON uses a registration process where every ONT has a unique serial number, typically 8 hex digits, that the OLT must authenticate. Many ISPs whitelist specific models or require you to register the serial with them. Some, like Sonic and Ziply in the US, officially support BYOONT and let you do this. Others, AT&T for example, are much harder to work with.
A second-hand Nokia G01S P from eBay might be tied to someone else's account, and the ISP sees that serial and says no. End of story.
Unless you can clone the serial number from your ISP's original ONT onto the stick. Some of these sticks support serial number rewriting through a command line interface over serial or SSH. But not all firmware versions expose that option, and some ISPs are now encrypting the serial number on newer firmware revisions. They're fighting back.
Like adopting a feral cat. It seems romantic, you imagine it, curling up on your networking bench, and then it scratches you and hides under the refrigerator.
There is a home lab enthusiast in Austin who documented this beautifully. They're running a MikroTik CRS3005 switch, which is a small 4-port SFP Plus switch, fanless, costs about $150. They put a UFGPON SFP stick in the WAN port and then ran 10GB SFP Plus modules to each room over pre-terminated fiber. They clocked 2.3 gigabits throughput through the GPON link. But the SFP stick was hitting 72 degrees, so they zip-tied a little 40mm USB fan to the side of the switch to pull air across the cages. Dropped the temperature to 58.
Zip ties and USB fans. That is not a marketing photo, but that is the reality of running a fiber backbone with SFP GPON sticks in residential equipment. And it works. That's the part that gets me. It's janky, but it works.
The payoff is real. You get a completely passive fiber backbone with no extra power bricks. The latency is as low as physically possible because there's no media conversion happening. GPON straight to SFP, straight to switch fabric, straight out another SFP port. If you're doing anything latency sensitive, competitive gaming, real-time audio, some weird AI inference pipeline, that matters.
Let me push on that latency claim, because I think some people hear fiber backbone and assume it's automatically faster than copper. But we're talking about the difference between maybe 0.1 milliseconds for copper and 0.05 for fiber over the same distance inside a house. Is that actually perceptible?
For most applications, no. You're right. The latency savings from eliminating media conversion is real, but it's on the order of microseconds, not milliseconds. Where it actually matters is when you're stacking conversions. If your topology is GPON to Ethernet ONT to copper switch to fiber media converter to another switch, each conversion adds a tiny buffer. Individually, they're nothing. Stack 4 or 5 of them and you've added a millisecond or two. For competitive gaming, maybe you care. For 99% of users, the real benefit of the fiber backbone isn't latency, it's electrical isolation and future-proofing. Copper Ethernet carries electrical potential between devices. If you have a ground loop between buildings or between floors on different electrical circuits, you can get weird interference, packet loss, or in extreme cases, fried ports. Fiber is glass. It doesn't conduct electricity, so running fiber between floors or between buildings eliminates that entire class of problem. It's why any competent network engineer runs fiber between buildings, never copper.
The latency thing is mostly a nice bonus. The real win is, my switch won't get zapped by a ground differential between the basement and the attic.
So category 1 summary. Fiber-to-fiber ONTs are the most elegant solution. They're also the most finicky. They require compatible OLT firmware, serial number registration, and active thermal management if you're in a warm environment. They cost somewhere between $30 and $90 depending on the vendor and whether you want pre-configuration. and you need a switch with an SFP cage that can take a GPON stick, which not all SFP cages are electrically compatible with. Some require SFP+, some work in standard gig SFP. You have to check.
And don't assume that because the cage physically fits, it'll work. The GPON stick needs power, and some older switches don't deliver enough on the SFP power rail. I've seen forum posts where someone plugged a GPON stick into a Netgear switch from 2015, and the switch just rebooted. The stick tried to pull more current than the SFP rail could supply, and the switch's power supply folded.
That's a good catch. The spec for SFP power delivery is supposed to be standardized, but in practice, budget switches from a decade ago sometimes skimped on the power budget for the SFP cages. Modern switches are better about this. Anything from MikroTik, Ubiquiti, or QNAP in the last few years should be fine, but if you're repurposing old enterprise gear from eBay, an old Brocade or something, check the specs.
That's the world of the fiber to fiber. Two fiber ONT. Compact, powerful, but finicky. Now let's look at the more traditional approach, fiber to Ethernet ONT bridges.
This is what most people picture when they think standalone ONT. A brown or white box, about the size of a paperback book, with a green SC-APC fiber port on one side and one or more yellow RJ45 Ethernet ports on the other. No Wi-Fi. No voice ports. Just a bridge.
The network equivalent of, build me a chair nobody notices they're sitting in.
The heavy hitters here are the Calix 716 GEI. That's one of the few with a 2.5 gig Ethernet port. And the Huawei HG801-10H with a single gigabit port, and the Nokia G2425GA, which gives you 4 gigabit ports, plus one 2.5 gigabit port. These are carrier-grade devices that have trickled down into the used market. You can find them on eBay for $20 to $60. The Huawei HG8COO10H is so common in Europe and Asia that you practically trip over them at electronics recyclers.
The benefits are?
They just work. They have LEDs. You can glance at them and see power, link, activity. If something goes wrong, you can power cycle one box without taking down your switch. They're passively cooled, no fans, and because they're not jammed inside an SFP cage, they don't overheat. The Calix 716 GEI is rated to operate at up to 45 Celsius ambient temperature without issues. They also support TR-069, which is an ISP remote management protocol that most consumer users don't need but some business connections expect. Cons, it's another box. Another wall wart, another cable, another shelf. And Ethernet distance limits apply, the old 100-meter rule for copper.
If your ONT is in the basement, but your router is on the third floor, you're extending Ethernet, not fiber.
With a fiber backbone ONT in Category 1, you could run fiber from the basement switch all the way up through the house. With these Ethernet ONTs, you're limited to 100 meters of CAT cable, after which you need another switch as a repeater.
Which for most homes is fine. Unless you live in a converted missile silo.
Which, you know, there's a community for that too.
Of course there are. I shouldn't be surprised. There's a forum for everything. Somewhere there's a guy in Kansas who bought a decommissioned Atlas silo, and now he's trying to figure out how to get Wi-Fi to the bottom level, which is 180 feet underground.
He's probably running fiber, not copper, because of the electrical isolation issue we just discussed. That's actually a perfect use case for Category 1. But for the rest of us in normal houses, the Ethernet distance limit is almost never the bottleneck. The bigger practical issue is cable routing. Fiber is thin, light, and can run through conduits that are already crowded. Cat 6 is thick, stiff, and a pain to pull through a finished house.
One thing worth flagging. The Ethernet port speed on most of these ONTs is still 1 gigabit, even though the GPON link itself can deliver 2.5 down. The Calix 76 GEI is the exception. That 2.5 gig Ethernet port means it can actually push near line rate. If you're paying for a gigabit plus plan, you need to check whether the ONT's Ethernet port is the bottleneck in your setup.
That is the underappreciated detail. Your ISP sells you 2.5 gig GPON. The ONT's Ethernet port is 1 gig. Congratulations, you just paid for capacity you can't reach.
To be fair, some all-in-one gateways from ISPs have the same limitation. Comcast and Verizon were shipping gateways with 1 gig LAN ports for years, while advertising speeds that technically used the full GPON link to the neighborhood node. When pressed, they'd say the extra bandwidth is shared across the household's multiple devices, which is true, but also misleading.
The math they're doing is the GPON link serves the whole house. And if you've got three people streaming 4K video simultaneously on three different devices, the aggregate could theoretically exceed 1 gig. But no single device could pull more than 1 gig because the Ethernet port on the gateway caps it. So you can't run a speed test on one machine and see anything above 940 megabits.
Which is why the Calix 716GEI with its 2.5 gig port is such an interesting device. It's one of the only Ethernet ONTs that doesn't bottleneck you. But it's also harder to find on the used market because people who have them tend to keep them.
The third category. I'm intrigued by these because they're the Swiss Army knife of the topology.
Let me frame why someone would even want this. You've got fiber coming in from the ISP. You want to send fiber to your office upstairs because that's where the big workstation lives. But your living room has copper drops already in the walls from the previous owner, and you're not about to tear out drywall to replace them, so you need a device that speaks both languages.
So these are devices that combine multiple personality types in one chassis. They'll have an SFP cage, or sometimes multiple SFP cages, plus a handful of copper RJ45 ports. They can act as the ONT termination point and the distribution switch simultaneously. Key examples. The MikroTik RB5509UG++S+IN, which has one SFP plus cage and 8 gigabit Ethernet ports, all inside a compact metal case with a silly number of LEDs. The QNAP QSW2942S gives you two 10 gig SFP plus cages and four 2.5 gig RJ45 ports, very affordable, around $220. And the TP-Link TL-SX15 gig copper ports and two 10 gig SFP plus ports.
These aren't ONTs themselves though, right? They're switches.
Correct, they're switches. But if you buy one of these plus a GPON SFP stick from Category 1, you've combined both functions into a single box. ISP fiber plugs into the stick goes into the switch's SFP cage, you configure that port for bridge mode and VLAN tagging, and the copper ports connect to your devices. One box replaces ONT plus switch.
This is for the enthusiast who wants the single box setup but also wants to run a hybrid network. Fiber to the upstairs office, copper to the living room, everything managed on one piece of gear.
It's the future-proof option. If you're renovating a house and you're putting fiber to certain rooms but you still have legacy copper drops to older devices, one hybrid switch handles all of it. The QMAP QSW2N4-2S in particular is fascinating because it gives you two separate 10 gig SFP plus cages. So you could put your GPON stick in one and then use the second cage to run a 10 gig fiber link up to another switch in your home office. And you've got the four 2.5 gig copper ports for wireless access points or your NAS.
I'm hearing enthusiast, but what I'm also hearing is the part where you reconfigure your life around VLAN tags.
This brings us to the ugly truth of hybrid devices. VLAN tagging is where most people lose their weekend. Here's how it works. Your ISP's GPON network uses a specific VLAN, a virtual network identifier, to separate your internet traffic from management traffic and from other users on the same splitter. Many ISPs use VLAN 35 or VLAN 835 or VLAN 100. That number tells the OLT which traffic is yours and which is for the set-top box or the voice line.
The default configuration on that MikroTik or QNAP switch is not going to be tagged for your ISP.
It will not be tagged at all by default. And if you don't set the SFP port as an access port with the correct VLAN ID, meaning it tags all outgoing traffic with the ISP's VLAN and strips the tag from incoming, the OLT never sees a coherent signal. The link physically comes up, the lasers are sending light, but nothing routes. This is the number one support ticket on the home networking subreddit and on the MikroTik forums. Someone buys an RB5009, plugs in a GPON stick, and posts, "Help, I have link but no internet."
The answer is always, "What VLAN are you tagged for?"
Let me give a concrete example. Deutsche Telekom and Proximus in Europe use VLAN 835 for internet. Comcast Business GPON in the US uses VLAN 2. Bell Canada often uses VLAN 35. If you buy a GPON stick where the ISP expects VLAN 835 and you configure VLAN 35 by mistake, it simply won't work. And the interface doesn't pop up an error, it just sits there, which is infuriating.
Because the interface thinks everything is fine. It sees light. It sees the remote OLT. But there's no logical connection at the Ethernet level. It's like dialing a phone number that's one digit off. The line rings. Someone picks up, but they don't speak your language, and they hang up. You know a connection happened. You just got nothing useful from it.
There's a corollary pitfall. Some ISPs also use a separate VLAN for IPTV, like VLAN 4.6 or 7.14. If you're trying to pass IPTV traffic through to your set-top box, you need the switch to forward that VLAN to a specific copper port untagged. And some managed switches don't support multiple untagged VLANs on different ports without a lot of configuration.
The MUSAC that's aware of itself is MUSAC, but for packet protocols.
I genuinely don't know what to do with that analogy. Let me walk through the MikroTik RB509 configuration flow, because this is actually the product I'd steer people toward if they're ready for the learning curve. You take the SFP cage port and set it as a bridge. MikroTik calls this bridge mode, but it's actually a layer 2 bridge that binds the SFP port to any Ethernet ports you select. You tell it the WAN port on the bridge is the SFP interface. Then you assign a VLAN. On RouterOS, it's something like interface VLAN add interface equals FP1 VLAN ED equals 835. Then you create a PPPoE client on that VLAN and drop in your ISP username and password. And it just starts working.
And it just starts working. You pause before saying that.
It works if the serial number is accepted and the VLAN is right and the GPON stick isn't throttling because it's too hot. That's the thing. You're stacking assumptions. Each layer can fail independently.
Is this category, hybrid devices, actually a trade-off? You get flexibility, but at significant know-how cost.
The cost is not just dollars. Power consumption is higher. A basic fiber to Ethernet ONT bridge draws maybe 5 watts. These hybrid switches with integrated management, multiple ports, an SFP cage, and a GPON stick can pull 15 to 30 watts. That's a meaningful difference running 24/7, and they're bigger. The RB509 is lovely metal, but it's heavier than it looks, and it does need room.
That cost also lands at the wallet. $200 for the RB509, maybe $90 for the pre-configured GPON stick. That's $300 or more plus shipping, compared to $30 to $60 for a used Calix or Huawei Ethernet ONT, and maybe an unmanaged gigabit switch for another $25.
And then there's VLAN understanding. Most users who buy a hybrid switch still don't fully grasp 802.1Q VLAN tagging, and that 20 minutes of reading becomes 2 hours of trial and error. Last month, a buyer posted on SmallNet Builder that they couldn't understand why they were seeing double their download speed on tests. Turned out they hadn't configured flow control properly, and we got something messy with the OLT.
Before we start putting this together, let's correct a few misconceptions, because these actually prevent people from doing damage. Herman, some people still think Cat 6e is a thing. Let's be explicit.
Glad you brought that up. First misconception, that you need Cat 6e for multi-gigabit Ethernet in a home. The rumor goes around that Cat 5e can't handle 2.5 gig. That's wrong, completely and flat out wrong. The IEEE 802.3b standard, which defines 2.5 and 5 gigabit on Ethernet, was designed to run 2.5 gig over Cat 5e cabling at up to 100 meters. Cat 5e has the same twist, same 24 gauge copper, bandwidth itself at up to 100 megahertz as tested. At 2.5 gig over Cat 5, the noise floor and insertion loss stay within spec at 100 meters. Cat 6 only gets required above 5 gig. Cat 6e doesn't exist, it's a made-up marketing term. Cat 6a is the real standard, handles 10 gig up to 100 meters.
It's vanished, like my trip to Mongolia.
Second misconception, that any SFP stick will work with any fiber on the ISP. I noted earlier, GPON typically uses SCAPC. The end is angled at 8 degrees. SCUPC, which you find in many consumer fiber transceivers, has a flat polished end that reflects light directly back. This not only doesn't fit properly in an SCAPC port, physically, the angle prevents mating. It can also damage the fiber end if you force it. Also, EPON or XGSPON sticks are different. Wrong standard means no link at all. ISPs like AT&T running XGS-PON need OWNs meant for that specifically, and right now consumer-grade standalone XGS-PON OWNs barely exist.
Even an SFP GPON stick well configured won't work if the underlying network is actually switching away from GPON.
That brings us to the open question that sits under all of this. With XGS-PON rolling out across North America and Europe, and by now in 2026 it's rolling out widely, the BYOWOT community may need to switch focus. Standing in front of a kit buying $50 of GPON legacy gear now only may not last. By 2027, you may stumble into the basement where Huawei MA5671A sticks sit inert because they're pointing at the wrong wavelength. Or rather, the more exact phrasing, the OLT now speaks XGS peon frames to you at 10 gig back to you, and your GPON receiver doesn't process them. But read through upstream. Why they refuse to talk.
We should draw out some concrete recommendations. You already went into nuanced details.
Here's how I'd platform the decision. Advice 1. Do you want a proper fiber backbone already part of the rest of your network? If yes, the MikroTik and similar pieces are the way to go. The CRS-3005 or CRS-3009 are excellent small switches for 10 gig internal fiber. The QNAP is easier to configure, mostly GUI-friendly, and relatively cheap. People making use of our findings should keep what they have and, if necessary, add a fan. Cheap, high output costs almost nothing. Try the serial number approach first, then buy pre-configured from a vendor who cloned from the provider or asked for the native unit serial. Some vendors list ordering information with clean details about their actual assignment and approval prior to shipping. Good candidates, FS.com, bigger mini warehouse shipping, maybe places on the community group for GPON interfaces.
What about for the rest of us? More modest, wanting fiber set free from complexity. A simpler pass-through box with state configuration and status indicators to make troubleshooting easier.
I also add, in fact, the approach for most typical installations I have in mind. Select a recommendation from the Calix or Huawei line. Copy the serial number values from your ISP's existing ONT, adapt and combine, and use them together in actual practice. The Calix 716 GEI price from normal auction sites is very reasonable. Serial and other info, ask your ISP which WAN thing they expect. Set the output following the second step, needing detail stuff you eventually assign. Obviously, agree to get clean. That simple serial delivered via a utility found along with the Ethernet connection gets you gone, possible, safe.
Is the heavy typical enthusiast better off choosing this mixed answer? Can they accept multiple boxes? A box maybe has heat success envelope. Seeing control really pass more, maintain full common or given dynamic network and advice.
The one box mix single summary, check the config above, read budget. Correct mean basically about what fits and gives the right amount of flexibility. If you want the simplest path, get a used Calix 716 GEI off eBay for around $50, clone your ISP's serial number, plug it in, and you're done. One box, one power brick, no VLAN configuration, no thermal management, no SFP compatibility charts. It's boring. It's reliable. It's what I'd put in my parents' house.
If you want the elegant path, the one that makes you feel something when you look at your network rack, you go fiber to fiber. GPON SFP stick into a switch with SFP gauges, fiber backbone through the house, everything running at line rate with no media conversion. But you pay for that elegance and setup time, thermal management, and the very real possibility that your ISP's OLT firmware will refuse to talk to your stick no matter what you do.
In between, you've got the hybrid approach. A single managed switch with SFP cages and copper ports, a GPON stick, and a weekend of VLAN configuration. It's the most flexible option and the most future-proof, but it's also the one most likely to have you posting on a forum at 2 in the morning.
To summarize for Daniel, know your ISP's requirements before you buy anything. Serial number, VLAN ID, GPON versus XGS-PON. If your ISP supports BYOWOT officially, the path is smooth. If they don't, you're in cloning territory, and you need to be comfortable with that. Category 1 gives you elegance and a fiber backbone at the cost of thermal headaches and compatibility roulette. Category 2 gives you reliability and simplicity at the cost of an extra box and potential Ethernet bottlenecks. Category 3 gives you maximum flexibility at the cost of configuration complexity and higher power draw. Pick your poison.
Whatever you pick, don't buy Cat 6e cable. It doesn't exist. Your Cat 5e is fine for 2.5 gig. Save your money for the GPON stick.
Daniel, we hope that helps. Send us photos of whatever janky fan setup you end up building.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.